Welcome to the Next Level Soul Podcast, where we ask the big questions about life. Why are we here? Is this all there is? What is my soul's mission? We attempt to answer those questions and more by bringing you raw and inspiring conversations with some of the most fascinating and thought-provoking guests on the planet today. I am your host, Alex Ferrari. I'm always looking to help the Next Level Soul audience take their soul to the next level. And I've been able to partner with Mind Valley to present you guys with a ton of free masterclasses between 60 and 90 minutes covering mind, body, soul, relationships, and conscious entrepreneurship. Some of these masterclasses are taught by spiritual masters, relationship experts, best-selling authors, legends in the personal growth and spirituality space, and so much more. So if you want to sign up for any of our free mind, body, and soul masterclasses, just head over to nextlevelsoul.com/free. Now, today on the show, we have near-death experience researcher, Dr. Scott Taylor. And Dr. Taylor has dedicated over 30 years to exploring the field of near-death experiences. Dr. Taylor and I had a fantastic conversation of what his findings were, what the science is behind near-death experiences and shared death experiences, and much more. So let's dive in. I'd like to welcome to the show Dr. Scott Taylor. How are you doing, Dr. Taylor?
I am awesome. Thank you for inviting me, Alex. I have been looking forward to this. This is great.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I'm fascinated with your work and what you've been doing for a couple years now. And I wanted to know, my very first question to you is, what was your life like prior to the work that you're doing, to this kind of spiritual experience and the experiences that you've had?
I grew up in southern Minnesota in what could be kindly called the Leave It to Beaver family. You know, it was in the 50s, and Dad went to work and Mom stayed home and raised the kids. And I grew up in the Presbyterian church. We attended all the time. And it was, I grew up in Mankato, Minnesota, which is in the southern part of the state. Mm-hmm. For your listeners who have watched Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, I did. Oh, yeah.
We are about 30 miles east of where that, you know, fictional representation of a real book took place. The only difference being in the television show, in the opening credits, there's Michael Landon and family, and they're, you know, got the wagon and they're going across the prairie. And in the mountain, in the background, there are mountains. Well, I have to tell you that southern Minnesota is about, you know, 1,100 miles from any mountain. So that part was a little...
But it looked pretty.
Dance,
it looked, but it looks pretty. It's Hollywood. Come on.
Yeah, it did. It looked pretty. So it was a calm... the idea was that you paid attention to social norms and you lived within those, and you know, and that was it. I had my world mapped out for me. You know, I was going to enter into the family business, and along the way, you know, I did college and graduate school and was a Boy Scout, and you know, just stuff that, you know, fit a particular mold, a particular model of how we could grow up, and then everything changed.
So before we get to your experience, what is a shared death experience as opposed to a near-death experience?
Thank you for asking that question. Yeah, a shared death experience is a relatively new nomenclature, originally coined about 10 years ago, plus or minus. The same guy who coined near-death experiences, which was Raymond Moody in his book, 1971, Life Beyond Life, he coined this experience, that also share death experience. And the difference is, in a near-death experience, most of the time, people have physical trauma, and it's so bad that their body dies. And as a result, our non-physical body lifts out of our physical body. It has an adventure in the non-physical world, and then the physical body is revived, and the non-physical body then re-enters that experience. Now, with a shared death experience, it is similar, except the person who's experiencing it, say me, there's no physical trauma. I'm more than likely they're sitting bedside with somebody who's making a transition, or they're asleep, or they're sitting quietly at home somewhere. So there's nothing that's going on with the experiencer. And then somebody they care deeply about is making their final transition. So they are actually going through a death experience. So when that person is leaving their body for the last time, there's an invitation sent to, say, me. And then I leave my physical body and accompany the person in their transition experience. So it's an actual death experience that somebody else gets to participate in. So it's very different in terms of, is this really death or isn't it? And the answer is, yes, there's really a death that's occurring, and another person is there firsthand to not only witness it, but they get to participate in it too.
Now, from my understanding in the shared death experience, you only go to a certain point on that journey, on that transition. You don't go through the full experience that a near-deather would have. Is that a fair statement, or am I incorrect? Like, you don't have a life review. You don't go any of that stuff.
Not true. In a shared death experience, you go as far as you are invited or allowed.
Right.
And it could be, you can participate with them in almost all of the of the steps, except of course the very final one, in which case, you know, you'd be staying also. But no, in my case, which we'll talk about in a little bit, it was, just the opening parts of the transition experience. But I've talked to people who been at the reunion, who have participated in meeting with divine beings and having a life review and accompanying people to the Healing and Regeneration Center. The Hall of Doors, all of the things that are available to near-death experiencers are available to shared death experiencers. But to your point, most of the time, it's just those opening stages. And that's what you read about mostly. But there are other people who have participated in a full-blown experience, just not very many of them.
So it's kind of like you go to the airport, you're seeing somebody off, you get through the gate, you get through security, and you get all the way to the gate right before they get on the plane. But you generally, that's the end of the road. You don't have
generally,
a ticket.
That's the end of the
you
road,
don't have a ticket. You haven't paid the ticket. That's pretty, you say your goodbyes and then you go back home, essentially.
Yep. Exactly right. I like that metaphor. Stick with that.
I will. You can use it, sir.
You don't mind if I use it, do you?
Absolutely. Because that was the first thing that popped in my head. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of like going to the airport and you go all the way to the gate. Because I've done that when I was younger, when you were allowed to go to the gate. Now you don't even get to go to the gate unless you have a ticket. But you would get all the way to the gate to say goodbye to somebody or to pick somebody up. Nowadays,
actually,
it's not.
With permission, you can go all the way up to the
gate.
Up to the gate with that tunnel. What am I trying to say?
The walkway to the, you can get all the way there.
You can get all the way there.
You can't get on the plane.
I just did it with my folks, they're both in wheelchairs. And so, we went through TSA. We went down to the hallway.
All the way down.
That is a great way to get through an airport very quickly.
Have somebody in a wheelchair? That's how we're
at. Have somebody in a wheelchair and then have one of those. Usually, that, you know, they come with an operator.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the operators know all the secret elevators and can get you right through TSA just like that.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show. A side note for everybody listening. Also, another side note is I discovered when I took my grandma to Disney World, best way to cut the line, have somebody in a wheelchair.
Have somebody in a wheelchair.
I'm just saying. Now, tell me about your extraordinary story in your shared death experience.
Sure. And thank you for asking, Alex. I appreciate that. It happened in 1981. I was in love with a beautiful woman. Her name is Mary Fran. And she and her son, Nolan, who just turned 7, had spent a day out sailing on Lake Washington, which is in southern Minnesota. And on the way home, she attempted to make a left-hand turn onto a county road, looked into the setting sun and didn't see the oncoming car. That car hit her right in the driver's side door and killed Mary Fran instantly. And Nolan had a really serious head wound, and they wound up taking him to Mayo in Rochester, Minnesota. So he had some of the best care in the world. Thank you, Mayo. They really did a lovely job with him. And there, he took 6 days to make his final transition. That's important because Mary Fran was one of 9 children. And so in the intervening time between the car accident and when Nolan left his physical body for the last time, there was a chance for all of these relatives to show up. So, I mean, we're talking brothers and sisters and uncle and aunts and grandparents and friends, other kind of cousins, family members, and that's just on her side. And then we got all of my side of the family was there too. And it just meant there were a lot of people that had taken over the waiting room as we waited through that final period. During that 6 days, because there were so many of us, what we did is we divvied the time up into 2-hour slots. And we went into and were with Nolan. And my particular slot happened to be from 3 a.m. till 5 a.m. on the 6th day after the accident. So I was there with Mary Fran's older sister, Jannie, and the two of us spent time with Nolan. We read him stories. We told him about who was there and what was going on. When you have that many people, it becomes really quite funny. I mean, the waiting room was just packed with people. And that the evening before, the young man in the group had gone foraging for cushions that they swiped from every couch they could find in the Mayo Clinic and brought him into the waiting room. And they were sleeping on the floors and on the chairs. It was just this wild, you know, mix of people trying to get comfortable while they were holding vigil for Nolan. Well, it got to be about 4:45 in the morning, about 15 minutes before the end of our shift was up. And Jannie, who was a trained nurse, went down to take a look at his chart. And she was looking at his chart and then was looking at the monitors that were surrounding his bed. And she just shook her head at me and held out her hand and said, "Scott, it's time." So we grabbed a couple of chairs and we sat by Nolan's head and we said our goodbyes. which meant that we had a chance to tell him that he had been a very brave young man and that he had been fighting for 6 days to stay with us all and to be with us. But it was clear that his body was giving out. And so Janie said to him that if his mother should come to pick him up, remember she died 6 days before at the scene of the accident, that if Mary Fran was coming to pick him up, that it was okay for Nolan to go with her and that that would be a good thing. And he shouldn't feel guilty because he had been such a brave and tenacious boy trying to stay with us. But if Mary Fran came, he should go. And we expressed our love for each other, and then we left. Got to be 5 o'clock, and we left. Well, it wasn't more than 45 minutes later when the nurse on the floor came in and woke us all up in the waiting room, and all of these people filed into Nolan's hospital room. And that's important because for whatever reason, I wound up being at the tail end of this group. So when I walked in, it was already about 4 people deep around surrounding the bed, as there were so many of us. And so I wound up just sitting on the window ledge next to Mary Fran's youngest brother, Willie. And there we just waited. And, you know, when you're holding vigil, it's, at least in Nolan's case, it was a very gentle process that his heart was just slowing down and the beats were becoming less and less vibrant until it just flatlined and there's that ominous tone that happened. And when Nolan flatlined, what I witnessed was Mary Fran coming across the veil and scooping up Nolan out of his physical body. And they had this extraordinary reunion, as you could only imagine, between a mother and child. And somehow I got to participate in that. I mean, I'm just sitting there on the window ledge, but yet I am there and feeling the emotional exchange between the two of them. And then to my surprise, what happened was then the two of them turned to me and they embraced me. And then the three of us went to the light. And once in the light, it was extraordinary, Alex. It was this exquisite place where you realize instantly that the universe is love and that you are entering into this place of profound love and acceptance. There's no judgment, but rather you begin to realize that you are an integral part of the love of the universe. And then the three of us, Mary Fran, Nolan, and I, had a chance to say our goodbyes. And we got to express our love for one another. We got to say how much we cared for each other. And then we had a chance just to be with one another as in this really extraordinary place. And then at some point, it felt like it was finished. And the two of them then turned and left and went further into the light. And I came back into my physical body. So that's part A of the story.
Real quick, if I can interject, what happened to your body during this time? Were you, obviously you weren't dead. You were kind of like in a meditative state. Clear. So you were kind of like a meditative state that, because you had other people around you. So you weren't alone in the room. So
no, I was definitely not alone.
So did anyone look at like, hey, what's going on with Scott? We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now, back to the show.
That's part B of the story.
Okay. I got ahead of you.
Thank you for that segue. That was great. So what happened was that I was with Mary Fran and Nolan in the light, and yet in my physical body, and I remember I'm sitting on a windowsill, and right next to me here is Willie. I mean, we're touching shoulders. And I am also fully present in the room. So I have now this split consciousness where I am with Mary Fran and Nolan, and I am in the room. I didn't have a word for it then. It took a long time for me to find it. I call it bilocation. That's as good a word as I can find.
Got it.
I had two distinctly separate, fully functioning consciousnesses. And I know this because I'm experiencing this incredible space, this area of love that is first witnessed by me when Nolan gets picked up by his mother. And then when I'm in the light with them, that it's like the love of the universe is inside me and it's trying to break out. And my face was this expression of joy, of ecstasy, of acceptance. It was totally inappropriate for the room. And right. So the only thing that I could think of to do was to take and cover my face with my hands. Because if anybody had looked at me, I am positive that they wouldn't have understood what was going on, and that my reaction was totally inappropriate for the room. Because remember, they had just lost their nephew, their cousin, their
friend,
their friend, whatever. And, you know, this is the second loss in 6 days with Mary Fran and then now Nolan. And, you know, there's a room filled with grieving people that are hugging each other and looking for consolation in each other's presence. And I couldn't do that right then. So I had, you know, my hands over my face. And then when my non-physical body came back to my physical body, I could regain my composure. I could take my hands down and I could be with the other grieving relatives in the room. So I was, the short answer to your question was, I was fully present in the room. And
that's fascinating.
There you go.
That's pretty fascinating because, I mean, studying, you know, a lot of the ancient texts, you hear of these yogis who are able to do what you just explained, meaning being in two places at the same time, having two consciousnesses at the same time. And it's fascinating to see that you had that experience because, I mean, I've only had Dr. William Peters on before about shared death experience. I haven't had a lot of people who had shared death experiences on the show. A lot of near-deathers, but not a lot of shared experiences. And I can't quite remember I don't think I ever asked them that question, what was going on with your body at the time. But yours is interesting because you had a room full of people. So if you're alone, you could just sit there and be in a meditative state almost, like in an out-of-body experience state. But you had other people. You were next to people. So it's fascinating. It's a fascinating what happened to you.
So it's... So the work of William Peters and the work that I've done with near-death and shared-death experiences, we know something about that transition. We know that there has to be a heart connection between the individual who's going to have a shared-death experience, me, and the person who's making the transition. In this case, that was Nolan. And, you know, just kind of as a side note, Mary Fran was a single mom. The birth father had disavowed any knowledge of his actions and so was never present in their lives. And So as a result, Mary Fran chose not to tell Nolan who his biological father was. And so when I came along and we are developing this nice relationship, Mary Fran and I, and I'm starting to begin to bond with Nolan, there was, you know, I'm a surrogate dad. And as a result, we had a really special connection. And when he left his physical body, he sent out that invitation. He invited me to come along. Now, it wasn't in words, it just happened. And so, but that seems to be a critical part of what is necessary for a shared death experience.
Someone has to invite you in. It's not like you just happen to be walking by the walking by the hallway, walking by the room, and you're like, "Hey, you want to come on?"
Yeah. Well, in addition, I had to be in a receptive state, and correct. I'd had about 45 minutes of watching, you know, the heart monitor, and you know, there's not a lot to do there. So you're kind of
meditate, almost of a meditative
you're
state.
You're in a meditative state, just watching this heart monitor and wondering when it's going to go silent.
So,
you know, that's part of it.
So, so let me ask you then, Scott, what mm-hmm. happened to you after this? Because obviously this experience happened to you. I'm assuming you just went on with your life as normal, never gave it another second thought. And just moved on with
yeah,
life.
Exactly that. Yeah, exactly that.
So what were the after effects of this experience, like physical, mental, psychological, spiritual?
Yeah. Well, what we know about near-death experiencers and shared death experiencers is that it changes everything. In an instant, what I discovered was how I thought the world worked didn't. I mean, it was entirely different than something else, you know, what I grew up with. I mean, the lexicon of the Presbyterian Church just doesn't cover things like bilocation and the moment that you're in your greatest grief, you are in your greatest joy, and the fact that you can, you know, be two places at once and have conversations with people that have made their transition, Mary Fran, and Nolan, who is making his transition. You know, it's just so outside my experience that I really didn't know what to do with it. And so I didn't tell anybody for like 15 years. It was just that profound a change. But what did happen was I knew that if I had done it once, I could do it again. And it became part of who I am to go on this big exploration for how can I make that happen again? Because I really want to be able to touch that place again because it's extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And I just knew that I could have a relationship with Mary Fran and Nolan that was available to me because it had happened once before. And so I wound up, in the first decade or so after that, I traveled the world. I went to a lot of the major spiritual sites, you know, like Stonehenge and the Sphinx and the pyramids and the Oracle of Delphi and Machu Picchu and on, looking to see if, you know, in these terrific spiritual centers, is there a spark of energy there that could help propel me into that space again? The answer is no.
Because I went to Machu Picchu and nothing happened. I'm just saying.
Nothing happened, you know? it's a wonderful travelogue. And I met some really amazing people and I, you know, touched base with some ancient spiritual stuff, but it wasn't what I was looking for. And so then I started, you know, my meditation traditions. I started off with TM. I was lucky in that Mankato, there's a very active The Metawakaden Sioux live in that area, the Dakota Indians. And mm-hmm. so I learned some shamanistic things. I went to, that's what I was doing in Peru, is doing some shaman training. And again, the idea was that I knew that there was.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Something, I had to be in the right state. Well, long story short, eventually I found the Monroe Institute that uses binaural beats to help you focus and hold expanded states of awareness. And it allowed me the time to learn what those states of awareness are. And it gave me the time in state so that I knew how to navigate the non-physical universe. And that opened up all the doors that I ever wanted in terms of, yes, I was able to touch that space again. Yes, I was able to reconnect with Mary Fran and Nolan and a whole bunch of other people that have made their transition.
During this meditative state?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so you never had another shared experience as like exactly like the original. Like you weren't in a hospital room and were invited in, and none of that.
None of that.
But in a meditative state, you've been able to tap back into that power, that energy, that place where you can connect with people on the other side.
Yes. People and people who've never been in the physical world, you know, divine entities of all sorts.
When you're in that altered state, what information are you able to gather from these other, from the people who have passed or people who've never incarnated? Is there any wisdom that you brought back with you?
Well, one of the things that happens to people that have near-death experiences, either they have it or they enter it into those states through meditation, you could do either way, they're vibratory states. And so if you can figure out what the vibratory state is, you can enter into those states. And once there, you begin to realize that we live in a world of duality where it's governed by the words either or, where, you know, Alex, you are you and I am me, and we're essentially separate human beings. But in the non-physical state, that's not true.
Absolutely.
It is it's a state where everything is interconnected. And so it's run by the rules of both and, which means I am me, Alex, you are you. We have our individual consciousnesses and we are part of a whole, the whole of human consciousnesses, which means that any information that we desire is available to us because all information is interconnected. And so that's, you know, that's the premise for things like remote viewing. You know, it's like, how can we be in this place and see what's going on 1,000 miles away or in another, on another planet or in another dimension or in another timeline? Just this last couple of weeks, I've had some wonderful conversations with people who are training themselves to jump timelines. So, you know, they have a life, I have a life, you know, Scott Taylor here in A, Universe A, but there's a Scott Taylor in Universe B, and you can jump in and participate with that person.
It's fascinating. I mean, the concept of the interconnectivity.
That's that easy for you to say.
Exactly. It just rolls off the tongue. The mistake that so many of us make is that we feel that we're disconnected, that we are individuals. Yeah. Especially in the West, which is it pounds into us the individuality of us all, like, you know, we're separate from everything. But as we're kind of realizing now, as the planet's going through, our economies are going through what they're going through, we're all interconnected and reliant on each other. It's kind of like looking at two ants on the ground and saying they're not connected. They're all part of the same group. that same mound where there is a queen and they're all working together. They're individuals and they go off and do their own thing, but they're working together as part of this unified group. And it's just a small example of where we're at. And that's one of the powerful, I think one of the most powerful things about the internet is that we are now interconnected in a way that we had never been in the history of man that we know of, at least.
Yeah. We're interconnected here in the physical, and we're interconnected in the non-physical plane too. So what we're seeing is that what has always existed in the non-physical has now replicated itself in the physical.
Yeah, and in a rudimentary way, but we're able to, I mean, the internet, as you as I know, growing up, I mean, both you and I came from a place where there was no internet. We were both born in a time that there was no internet. So we understand the difference. But when the internet came, it was clunky. It was brutal. You had to get those free AOL discs just to log in. Back in the day, it was a brutal experience. And it's gotten better and better and better, but it's going to even get even more advanced as the years go by. Where
I can remember when 50K speed was just
50K. Oh. Are you kidding? I was speeding. My first modem was 2400 baud. So, oof. Like 36K, 50K. What are you going to do with all that speed? sorry, it's just a couple old folks talking about the olden days. I apologize. But so with all these experiences that you've had, what is the biggest lesson or piece of wisdom that you've brought back that has shaped your life and is a message that you're putting out into the world?
I like to think of us as beginning to understand that consciousness, loving consciousness, is fundamental and causative. It is the building block of the universe. Everything arises out of consciousness. And our time arises out of consciousness. Molecules and atoms, they arise out of consciousness. And that this loving consciousness is the fundamental building block of the universe. And so those of us that have chosen to come into the land of duality are coming here because we are wanting to learn more about love and to expand our capacity to love as a being, not only as a physical being, but our non-physical being. Being in duality stretches us so that we have more awareness of our loving nature, of the universe's loving nature, and how to be expressions of that love here in the physical world. And beyond that, and we can enter into it at any time that we want to. Meditation training happens to be a wonderful way into it. It's a lot more fun than having a car accident or you drown or,
There's that way too. I mean, there are options.
We can do the physical trauma thing, but
no head trauma needed is what you're saying.
Yes, no head trauma needed.
Now, with all the studies you've done over the years with near-death experiencers, what are some common elements that many near-deathers have? I mean, I've spoken to dozens of near-deathers at this point on the show, and I've already, just from my own rudimentary research, have come across a handful of things, like the life review and in a panoramic place, that the place of love, relatives or loved ones that you've met before, connecting with a deity that you in this life would have followed or worshiped. So if it's Jesus, it's Jesus. If it's Muhammad, it's Muhammad. If it's Buddha, it's Buddha. If it's a yogi, it's a yogi. These are the people that show up. So if you're Buddhist,
generally speaking, Muhammad's not going to show up for you. Generally speaking, these are common themes that I've heard from multiple stories. But I'd love to hear your common elements and what you found in your research.
I think the thing that's important to realize is that these events are, you know, our transition from a physical world into the non-physical world is all metaphorical. It is based on what it is we know as a human being. So like you said, I happen to grow up as a Presbyterian, Christian, kind of middle of the road, mainline, whatever.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
So that will profoundly affect what kinds of things will happen to me in my near-death experience. So I will more than likely encounter people that I know, you know, my friend, my grandparents, you know, my cousins who have passed, my best friends in high school who've made their transition, you know, they'll be available for me because that's what I expect. And that's where my heart connection is. Would Jesus Christ show up? That would be a lovely thing. Would Buddha or my bear totem show up? Probably not, because I'm not wired into those traditions. You know, am I going to go through the Hindu bardos? Probably not. So we think of it as, you know, what are the metaphors in our head that will allow us to enter into this rather extraordinary space? So if we're moving from here to there, and we can feel the difference between being in the physical world and now moving out into the non-physical world and expanding, sure, a tunnel shows up. You know, it just, because it feels like a tunnel. I had this guy who was a trucker, and he was in an accident. And when he left his physical body, he described going up a tailpipe into heaven. And of course he did, because he's a trucker.
Sure.
Truckers have tailpipes, you know. I just love that. Anyway, so yeah, there are typically people, when you leave your physical body, there's usually somebody there who's a guide, somebody that you know and love, and it's their job to take you to the light. And you may go through a tunnel, you may not go through a tunnel, you can do it fast, you can do it slow. I encourage people to do it slow, because that tunnel is freaking amazing. There's just all kinds of cool stuff in it. And then once you enter into the light, there's a reunion of your family and friends, and you get to design that for yourself to get a chance ahead of time. And then there's a point where a divine being shows up, and you get a chance to have an interaction with a divine being, somebody who's never had a physical existence before. They've got another job, and their job is to begin to have you realize again how interconnected we are. And so you merge with this divine being and realize that there's no difference anymore. You are you, there's the other, the divine being, but then there's this merger, and the divine being has the ability to just love every bit of you. If there's any dark places in the soul, the light that the divine being has just makes them go away. And everything about you is love. Good, bad, ugly, those distinctions just go away. All of you is love. And then there's a life review. And the life review is an extraordinary event. Do we have a second or two?
Sure, go for it.
This is a thing that people don't get very often. Typically, life reviews happen from three different perspectives. You are you, so you get to relive your life just exactly as it happened with all your thoughts and sensations.
But all at, but all to, not to interrupt you, I'm sorry, but all at once, from what I understand. It happens not in yes. not like in a timeline, like it happens all at once, which is difficult for us to understand here in this place, but you're able to see everything, every moment, every second of your life, and not only see it all at once, but feel it all at once. Is that correct?
Feel it all at once. And you get to know what your motivations were all at once. And I know this sounds odd, but you can slow it down and you can speed it up. I had a guy tell me that when he did his life review, there was a particular spot where he was mowing his front yard. And he chose to slow it down such that he could count all the mosquitoes flying around him. And it was like whatever HD we have now, you know, 1080, it's like in thousands of thousands, 80.
Many Ks, many Ks, as they say.
Many, many Ks. So it has the ability, you can speed it up and slow it down. And that divine being that we just merged with typically sits right with you during the whole experience and usually asks you just one question, which is, what did you learn? What did you learn? So you're having a scene and maybe you don't like what happened in that scene. The divine being says, well, what did you learn? And, you know, reverse, say there's something you really liked. Wow, that was just so cool. What did you learn? And so you begin to gain perspective on what it is that happened in your life and why it happened. Okay, so that's part A. Part B is you get to also do that same life review, but you get to be the other person in the scene with right. as much detail as you just now have. So if you have a best friend, you get to play the best friend in that scene and know exactly what they were thinking and how they were viewing the world and what motivated their actions. And so you get both. You get to be 100% you, you get to be 100% the other. So here's that bilocation thing. But then there's the third perspective, which is the omniscient perspective, God's perspective, if you will. And from this one, what you begin to be able to sense is that you're having some sort of interaction. Say you're at a checkout counter at the grocery store and it's not going well. This young girl is there and it's her first day and it's the cash register isn't working and you're being snippy, right? You're just not being your best self. Well, what you begin to then realize from the omniscient perspective is, how did that scene play out? How did it play out for you and your friends, your community, and how did it roll out into the world? And then how did it roll out for that young woman, to her friend? She went home, yelled at her boyfriend, who went home and kicked the cat, who, right? So you get to see how our wow. attitudes and our actions and what we say play out in a larger context.
Good and bad.
Good and bad. Absolutely. Now, here's the really cool part. And that is that this divine being is there to assist you through the life review. And so this is worth the price of admission for anybody who's listening to this program. Here's your get out of jail free card. You can converse with your divine being and say, you know, what if that scene with the checkout girl who's on her first day at work, what if I had done that differently? What would have happened? And so you get to replay it. And this time I get to be, you know, like, don't worry about the cash register. You know, take your time, go slowly. It doesn't make any difference if I stand here for a little bit. It's important that you learn how to do this. And frankly, all of us have had a first day at work. So just don't worry about me. Be cool and have fun learning how this cash register works.
So it's like a take two. Like you're making a movie, but you're now like, okay, let's do it again. But this time, be nice to the cash register lady.
That's right. Now, here's the cool part. that's like instant karma release, because that experience where now I'm the nice guy instead of being a jerk.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
That enters into the human experience also. Scott is a nice guy. So now there's another timeline. There's another experience that has been inserted into our human collective. And we get a chance to expand what it is that we learn in the physical world by having these redos during our life review.
Mm-hmm.
So it's profoundly healing. And not only do you get, okay, so you get a redo. Well, how about if I did it this way? You know, you get redos 3, 4, 5, whatever. You get a chance to experiment and see what the expression of your authentic self would have on that particular exchange and then how that rolled out into the physical world. So it's a rather extraordinary thing that it's an unfortunate thing. You don't find it that much in near-death experiences because, it's traumatic. All of a sudden, you know, you're thrown out of your physical body because of an accident. You're plunged into this world that you're not familiar with and weren't expecting. It has completely different rules for how you navigate and what you learn. And some of these opportunities just, you don't know to avail yourself of them.
Right.
But now you can. And that's what that divine being is there for. That divine being is your tour guide of what it's like to be back into this non-physical world again.
You kind of need somebody to kind of walk you through this process. Kind of like when a child is born, we're their guides. As parents, we're their guides through this experience. Like, hey, we've been here. This is how you walk. Don't touch the fire. You're going to burn yourself. Don't put that in your mouth. All yep. these kind of things. So it's similar in a just similar a different way.
In that way. After a while, you know, what we have to do is remember what it's right. like to be in that space again. And the divine being is there to help with that transition.
No.
There's a bunch. There's the circle of self. There's the circle of friends. There's the healing and regeneration center.
What is the healing? I haven't heard that one off. I haven't heard that one.
Okay. So oftentimes there's a reception center. So you go up and, there's a kindly person who says, "Hi, welcome to the afterlife. And what we would like you to do is to, first off, we're going to check you in, and then we're going to put you in a room where you get a chance to relax and lose all of the garbage that you've accumulated by being in the physical world. And in particular, say somebody's had like an amputation, you know, and they've gone their whole life without their right arm. Well, that right arm is restored in that, you know, our non-physical body doesn't have to keep the ailments of the physical body. Say the person died of cancer. Well, that cancer doesn't have to be in the non-physical body, but it takes us a little while to remember, oh, I'm not sick. I don't have to act sick.
Right.
I don't have to act like an amputee. And so it's a process of remembering and raising up our vibratory level to that of the non-physical universe so that we can participate fully.
Have you ever seen the movie Defending Your Life?
I use that movie all the time
so
in my
brilliant.
Class.
It's so brilliant.
And mostly because, you know, I'll sit there and go, Defending Your Life, right?
Albert Brooks, Meryl Streep.
And they go up to heaven. She has to defend her life, blah, 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 blah. Heaven is not like that. This whole movie is absolutely wrong, and it's wonderful.
It's so wonderful. But, you know, but they did get a couple of things, according to the research and according to the stories that we've heard. There is a life review. Now, there's a life review. But we don't have attorneys fighting for you. And if you don't get it right, you got to go back. But there is the concept of a life review. One of my favorite things about that movie is Albert Brooks. For everyone listening, go watch Defending Your Life with Meryl Streep and Albert Brooks.
Yes.
And that Albert Brooks wrote it and directed it. And that he goes into every restaurant and can eat whatever he wants all the time. And the food is instantly there. And they just like, and he's so like caught up with it. He's like, Can I take these apple pies home? And he's walking around with like 15 apple pies boxes, walking back to his hotel room, which is where he's staying while he's defending his life. And the worse your life is, the more days you have to look at. And the less the better your life is, you only have like 2 days to look at, things like that. It's a fascinating idea of what it is. And one of my other, if we're going down this road, is What Dreams May Come. It's such a wonderful film.
So that one is a really wonderful example of, you know, we talk about the light.
Mm-hmm.
And when people, you know, go through the tunnel, they enter the light, and there's, you know, like the family reunion.
Right.
There's three different kinds of light. There's black light, white light, and clear light. And each type of light that you enter into has a different kind of experience. Well, we see a lot of the white light in the media. You know, that's this powerful light that's just overwhelming, and it's all loving, and it's one of the cool things that I learned from somebody is that you become part of the light, you know. So you enter into it, and if you're really clever, you'll look behind you and discover there's no shadow. because you know, this light is emanating from a source, but you are part of the light. Anyway, so that's white light. We see a lot of that. Harry Potter went through it. You know, he had a white light experience. Anyway, so that's what black light, on the other hand, is this place of infinite potential. It is what the universe was before matter was created. And if you're an Old Testament person, you know, Genesis 2 talks about how, you know, in the beginning there was a word, and the word was in the void. And so this is the void. This is where everything exists in its potential. There's no time, there's no space. It's just the universe in its primordial state. Mm-hmm. And it's unbelievably wonderful. The people that I've known that have had black light experiences, almost to a person, they cross their arms like this and they begin to rock. And they talk about how the black light held them and how it loved them and how this was the words. Their words are, this is the womb of God. Isn't that lovely?
That's wonderful.
This is the womb of God. So that's a black light experience. Excuse me. A clear light experience. That's what happened to me. And that's where you are in a physical surrounding, and all of a sudden you begin to realize that everything is made up of light. So this microphone is made up of light. All those books in the background, my CDs, are made up of light. We are all made up of light. So back to the original, What Dreams May Come. When Robin Williams first enters heaven, he enters into a world where it's all of these colors. And all of these colors are emanating their own light. And he is stepping into that world, stepping into the world of color and light. And that's what it's like to have a clear light experience. So it's one of the finest descriptions, not verbal, but using images. It's one of the finest images that I've seen of what a clear light experience is him entering into that space. Now, so thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite. I mean, even before any of this, is when it first came out, I'm a huge Robin Williams fan. And I had a pleasure of meeting him before his passing. And he was just extraordinary. Yeah, it's an extraordinary. It was a few months before he passed. It was an extraordinary time, extraordinary energy that I felt off of him. And he is, he was a remarkable man. I know a lot of people who've worked with him over the years and tells me wonderful stories about Robin. And it's so tragic of what happened with Robin, but then that movie becomes even more haunting.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
After the fact, but when that movie came out, I think it was 90 in the mid 90s somewhere, when that movie came out, I was still fairly much of a knucklehead in my 20s. I was in my 20s in the 90s, so I was fairly much still a knucklehead, and that movie still pierced through the knuckleheadness and touched me in a way that that not many films did during those years. Shawshank Redemption is another one that kind of really pierces as well. And you can call that you can make analogies between Shawshank Redemption and a near-death experience of I'm going through a dark tunnel and coming out into the light and the thing. And you can go deep into that. I have a question for you. With all the research you've done over the years, have you ever heard of a disturbing near-death experience? Because I've yet to come across one of those.
Yes. Yes, I have. There aren't very many. In the literature, they call them less than positive, LTP.
Less than positive. Very nice.
But here's a really interesting thing. We were talking about William Peters and his research into shared death experiences. Now, remember that near-death experiences happen to somebody who's living. They die, have the experience, and they come back to their physical body. So it's not really a death experience. It's something really similar, but it's not the same.
Right.
Shared death experiences, however, somebody is actually making their transition. So we are witnessing and experiencing a real transition. In his book, At Heaven's Door, which is the one that's there.
Right there.
Right mm-hmm. on the end, 800 people, 100% of the people had a benevolent experience. They went to a benevolent afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
So this less than positive experience that happens during an NDE, I'm now beginning to shift my belief system a little bit to say that has to do with returning to the physical, and that less than positive experience must have some sort of bearing on, if it's happening to me, I'm going to recover and live life more here in the world of duality, but that less than positive experience has meaning for me somehow. It's teaching me something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lesson involved with that. And that's entirely consistent with, Joseph Campbell and
the Hero's Journey.
The Hero's Journey. At some point in the Hero's Journey, you are confronted with this task, this obstacle that you have to overcome.
Mm.
And I think that a large part of what it is that happens for people when they have a less than positive experience is that they have to draw upon their inner resources to overcome the obstacle that's been put in front of them. They have to maintain this sense of detachment from what's going on. They have to adopt a new worldview so that they can continue on. The easy ones are, it's like, somebody comes along and whacks you alongside of the head with a 2x4 saying, "Hey, Taylor, you are not living the life that you wanted to, and you're screwing it up, man. And here's what you need to do in order to get back on the path." That's an easy one.
Mm-hmm.
But less are, how do you think about yourself and in relation to the physical world? case in point, because I've done a lot of this work with people who have entered into this state and they've been confronted by, go back to Harry Potter, the three-headed dog. Remember that one?
It was sure, all of course. Drooling,
sitting on the trap door.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A person that has dominion in that world would step back from that scene instead of being terrified by that three-headed monster dog. They would step back and go, "Hello, three-headed drooling dog. Clearly, you are here to get my attention. What is it that you want to tell me so that I can keep moving forward?" And almost instantly, every time, that three-headed dog will transform and it will turn into some other entity that says, "Well, actually, I want you to do this, this, and this when you get back to the physical world, because that will have an impact on who you are as a human being and the kind of joy that you can spread in the world." Case in point. So there's lots that those kinds of experiences can tell mm-hmm. us, but there aren't that many of them. And truthfully, I've had more than one interview with somebody scheduled and they would back out at the last minute because it's painful for them to talk about it. And so there's not that much written about it.
So is it more so when you have a quote unquote not so what is it called, not so positive or not so nice
less than positive
experience when it comes to NED, it seems to me that from what you're explaining that it is still based in love, in a way that this is what is needed for you to learn and to get these lessons to take back with you. Some people can hear it from a divine being. Other people need the three-headed drooling dog to get their attention. And sometimes they will understand what's going on and sometimes they'll just be terrified. So there is those, is that a fair statement?
Fair statement. And again, you know, always there is that divine being that's right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. They're
call on, you know, maybe one of the lessons that we have to learn in life is to call on help when we need it.
Right. Right.
And, you know, it becomes a complicated answer.
No, I completely understand, but it's great because I've never had a conversation about this part of NDEs. Everyone always talks about the positive is life changing, but there are people who do come back and I've heard very kind of like whispers of it from people, but never actually sat down and spoken to somebody who's had conversations with people who've had them. They generally don't do interviews.
They don't do interviews. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially not public ones because it's so painful for them to go back down that road. So there's not a lot of information about negative NDEs in the literature. You're absolutely right. But I think it's still like in life when something, and many times the things that happen to us that are quote unquote negative in our lives are there to teach us, whether we can see it or not at the time is not really relevant.
Yeah. And if your viewers are really interested in this, Nancy Evans Bush has written three books on less than positive experience. She's the only one that I know of that has significant research in this area. She mm-hmm. had one and thus was able to convince others to come forward and tell their stories. And her books are beautiful. They're beautifully mm-hmm. written.
I will
compassion and insight onto what else could this mean.
Well, I will definitely try to reach out to her, see if I can get her on the show, because I would love to have a deep conversation about this subject. Now I'm going to ask you a few questions I ask all my guests. What is your definition of living a good life?
Oh. So when you say good, what I hear is not moralistic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that can be one criteria.
Right.
It says, you know, are you living a life that's consistent with the moral values, with the community that you're living in?
Sure.
Right. So my answer is like, not that.
Not that.
not that we're not going that way. When I hear you say good life, what I'm hearing you saying, are you living an authentic life? Are you living a life that is the truest expression of who you are?
Right.
And are you pursuing those the kinds of experiences that you signed up for when you came into this world? And
we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Because we all do. I mean, there's a whole center up there that talks about when you come into this physical world, there's a whole team of people that help you assemble the life that you're going to have here. You know, you get to pick your parents and your friends and what kind of experiences you want, both physical and non-physical, spiritual. I mean, they craft what your life will be like. And a good life is consistent with coming up with those kinds of examples. Are you living the fullest expression of your life that is appropriate for your learning, meaning it's me, for my learning, but what is it that is needed for the other people to accomplish in their lives? And what does humanity need for me to do in this world? Here's my case. So when I get a chance and I make my final transition and I go up to the non-physical universe, one of the first people I want to meet is Judas Iscariot. Judas Iscariot, to remind folks out there, he's the person who betrayed Jesus and, you know, sold him for 30 pieces of silver. Jesus could not be Jesus without Judas Iscariot.
Right.
And who would sign up for that job?
Who's going to play that part in the movie?
Yeah, and who is willing to accept the hate and damnations of thousands of years and millions of people for the betrayal of the divine Jesus? And in my worldview, it had to be Jesus's best friend, because who else would do that for him? Only somebody that loved him so dearly.
Right.
That he would be willing to sacrifice not only his life, but his reputation and his, you know, all that bad juju that people keep sending him for thousands of years.
His name is a noun at this point, Judas.
Oh, yeah.
All you got to say is Judas, and you know exactly what that means.
You know exactly who we're talking about. But that was his calling. That was his fullest expression of himself, was to play that role so that the two of them together could make the life of Jesus be the central role in you know, and where it had to go. So when you ask me about what is it that is a good life, I think it has to do with who you are. Are you living your authentic self? And are you living this this expression of physicalness in a way that gives you all of the experience that you need to move forward?
And Judas pretty much knocked out that name. It's not one of the most popular names on the list of babies.
No,
it's not so much. I've yet to run across a Judas personally. I don't know about you. I've never run against one. So
no,
he pretty much killed that name.
I've heard about parents who name their kids Judas and the judge goes, nope, not acceptable. Pick another one.
Amazing.
We're not going to let that happen.
Now, what is your mission in this life?
My mission in this life is to love, to become a further expression of what is possible. to expand my ability to love and to be there for those who want to hang out with me, you know.
Who want to go on the journey with you, sir?
Who want to go on the journey with me?
And
this is a cooperative adventure, and it's my job to play my part to the fullest extent that I can.
And last question, what is the ultimate purpose of life?
We're back to that. The ultimate purpose in life is to love, to expand our ability to love, and to gain knowledge so that we as human beings, as a being, a singular being, become wiser, but also for us as a collective, so that we become wiser as a species, and we begin to draw on that. And for me, my personal mission is to make available these states of consciousness for people who would like to explore them. And they aren't, you know, this is, it's too bad. We have lots of people who love to read books about near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. I think we're at the point in our history now where people can say, you know, stop reading. Just stop reading and experiment and experience what it is that near-death experiences go through, because that is what will grow your soul more than anything.
And where can people find out more about you and what you do?
Please visit me at my website, neardeathmeditations.com, neardeathmeditations.com. And there's a bunch of stuff about me. The classes I hold, where I take people to the same places near-death experiencers go to. If you don't want to take a class, you can buy, those are my 6 CDs that are above my head there. So you can do them at home. You can do these meditations at home. The technology that we use on those is a derivative of binaural beat technology, and it's fabulous for focusing your attention and expanding your awareness. I'm also a podcaster, so when you go onto YouTube, look up The Afterlife Files. The Afterlife Files, and you'll find some really interesting interviews with researchers and people who've had near-death experiences. So between my website and my podcast, that'll do it.
Dr. Taylor, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It's been so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and thank you for the work that you're doing and the love that you're trying to spread into this world, my friend. I appreciate you.
Alex, this was awesome. I had a really good time, and thank you for asking such good questions. I appreciate it.
I want to thank Dr. Taylor for coming on the show and sharing his knowledge with all of us. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, head over to the show notes at nextlevelsoul.com/116. And just to let you know, we have started a new near-death experience series on YouTube where we will be highlighting near-death experiences. So just go to nextlevelsoul.com/YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, trust the journey. It is here to teach you. I'll talk to you soon.